You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Individuals suffering from mental illness have always faced big barriers accessing support services. Inmates have the double stigma of being crazy and criminal. The neglect of mental health needs in prisons has escalated to the point that the Correctional Investigator of Canada recently said that Canadian penitentiaries are becoming the largest psychiatric facilities in the country. John Service is a psychologist. He's worked as a clinician for the Mental Health Commission of Canada. He is author of the recent report, Under Warrant. It was published in July, and it examines the state of mental health in federal penitentiaries. Welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio, John.
Glad to be here.
Tell us first how this report came about.
Well, the Office of the Correctional Investigator has been concerned about mental health issues in Canada's penitentiaries for probably 6 or 7 years, very actively. And this relates to not only the provision of mental health services, but also things like deaths in custody and some of the difficulties that have occurred throughout the system, and some of that relates to mental health. So it's been an ongoing kind of issue for them for some time. So they decided to take a look at the mental health plan that's been talked about for the last 6 years, take a look at it, see what it looked like, see how it was rolling out, and trying to get some sense of if whether it's been effective or not. And so that's what led to the report. And I was hired by the Office of a Correctional Investigator to do it.
There are men in prison, there are women in prisons, there are Aboriginal people in prisons. Was your study incorporating all of these populations?
No, it was strictly looking at men, males. There is, in fact, a mental health strategy for women, and they're in different institutions. And Aboriginals are across the country, of course, higher proportions in Saskatchewan and the Prairie Provinces. And there is not at this point a separate or specific strategy for Aboriginal mental health. There are some programs and elders and healing lodges and the like that have been incorporated into the federal penitentiary system, but there isn't a separate strategy. So this really looked at the non-Aboriginal population and the non-female population.
Now, what are the different levels of care that should be available to an inmate with mental health issues?
Okay. That's a very good question, because that gets to the heart of what their mental health strategy is and should be. Well, first of all, you should have a good assessment when you come into the system for the first time. And the Canadian penitentiary system does not have that. Other systems do, like the UK and Australia, for example, but we haven't that. We have somewhat of a system, but it's not as good as it should be. And so they're trying to develop a new system to assess folks' needs, mental health needs, as they enter the system, and that's being developed now, but it's being developed very, very slowly. Once you're in the system, once you're in a penitentiary, then you rely on what's called primary care services. That's like going to your physician in the community. We all know what that's like. So it's your first level of service, and there really is not nearly enough of primary care services available to inmates. Secondly, then, if you get into more difficulty, you need then to go to what's called intermediate care. And that is, if your physician or your psychologist that you see in the community can't help you, then you need something more intense, like a day program or short-term residential program, something like that. They don't have that at all in the penitentiary system. It's talked about, not funded, not instituted, needs to happen. If that doesn't work, then you need to go into what we would all know as a hospital, a psychiatric hospital or a general hospital with psychiatric facilities. And they do have 5 regional psychiatric hospitals. They're understaffed. The buildings that they're in often are very, very old and not up to scratch, and so need to be replaced. And they need to have more programming in those facilities. Once you get finished your sentence, then you move to the community and you have parole services. Very good services, but need much more concentration on mental health services, because a lot of the guys, when they come out, need to continue to be seen in order to be able to make a good adjustment to the community. Now, because they're understaffed and because the services aren't widespread enough, and because the government is adding new prisons and adding more capacity because they intend to put more people in jail for longer periods of time, this is the current Harper government's plan. And whether you like that or not isn't the issue. The issue is, if the services aren't up to scratch, or there aren't enough services now, and they're making those additions, then they have not planned for that extra capacity they're going to need in mental health services for the new inmates. So that's a secondary but serious issue that they have to face.
Now, you mentioned many inadequacies, insufficiencies in the system, and you identified the intermediate care as being completely absent. So what do they do with prisoners who are in need of that?
Well, one of the things that happens is that, as happens in our hospitals outside of the penitentiary system, is that people get into the what we call the tertiary care or the psychiatric hospitals, and then they can't get them out. Once they're ready to be moved back into the prisons, they can't send them there because there isn't any intermediate care. That's one problem. A second problem is that it puts a lot more stress on primary care, because they've got to now look after these guys if they can. What happens if they can't is they end up in segregation. That's for their own protection, because they can often be victimized by others within the prison system, but also because often their behavior requires more intensive services, which aren't available, and so one of the ways is to put them in administrative segregation, which means they literally get very, very few services, and they spend long periods of time alone in their cells, and they're out, you know, often 23 hours a day. That is just not effective. It's just not useful, and so that needs to be changed. It's serious when you don't have that level of care, because you have to do something, and that's what they do. But they really do need an intermediate care system.
Segregation is a kind of a soft word when it sounds like it's almost like the whole what the prisoners call the whole solitary.
It is a soft term for spending a lot of time by yourself. Yes.
What other important shortcomings did you find in your review, aside from the ones that you important ones that you've listed so far?
This may not sound as as exciting as some of the other stuff that we've talked about or as relevant, but it's perhaps the most serious issue, and that is that when we asked for a plan, because they've been talking about a plan for about 6 years, this mental health strategy or this mental health plan, when we asked to see a copy of it, they could not provide us one, which meant that they had developed through a lot of documents some ideas about how they were going to address mental health services, but they hadn't put it all together in a master plan, which had where we're headed, how much staff we need, what are the staff mixes that we need, how much money do we need, what do we need this year, what do we need next year, what do we need in 3 years, how are we going to institute intermediate care, and how are we going to tie all these together. There just wasn't one document that they could point to that did that, and that's a serious issue, because if you don't have a good plan, if you want to go from Vancouver to Lima, Peru, you need a plan. Otherwise, you run the risk of spending too much money, not getting there on time, getting lost, all that kind of stuff. So you need a plan, and you need a plan so that you can evaluate whether you're getting there effectively, whether you're implementing your services effectively. So that was one thing. Another issue for them is they have a hard time attracting staff, and they're going to have a lot of folks retiring soon. It's an issue that all sorts of people in all walks of life have, and so that's been a real problem as well. They need to beef up their mental health services in the community, so that when people come out and are adjusting to community, other institutions, and are adjusting to community life again, that they get the supports they needed. But you know, like, they really do need to do all of that, and it's, and they do have more of the mentally people with mental disorders than any other system in the country, which is remarkable. And they really do need to address it. But we just need to address it better outside of the prisons as well. It's almost it is as well an indictment against the way we provide services to folks that need mental health services outside of prisons as well as inside. People in other countries do a better job in the prison system and outside the prison system for mental health services than we do in Canada.
Yeah, it's remarkable, and I would add another word, remarkably shameful. How is that? Is that just another reflection of the overall stigmatization of people with mental health illnesses?
Yeah, I think so. I think it certainly is. I think stigma, and I would say more importantly, discrimination, because stigma leads to discrimination, is in fact one of the big issues. Yeah, and we're starting to address that, but that's a slow piece. Another thing that happened is that when we set up our system, we set it up to be mostly a physical health system, so that what is paid for are physician services in the community and hospital care. When the Brits set up their system, they set it up more broadly, and they included in their national health system in 1948 public health, mental health, and physical health. So right from the get-go, they had a broader vision of the integration between keeping people healthy, preventing injury, providing services for physical health, and providing services for mental health, and the connection between the two. So it's a function of how we began our system, and we haven't changed it dramatically over a long period of time. And so we got to change that as well. One of the ways that you can see the discrimination most clearly, and where it is the most deadly, I think, is in the amount of money allocated by provincial governments for mental health services based on the number of folks that have mental health problems and the burden or the cost to society. And you compare that to cancer or other groups of illnesses and disorders, and mental health gets a lot less in terms of percentage, in terms of funding from federal government and from provincial governments than the others do. And that's a really good sign of, you know, an institutional discrimination against mental health.
Well, we talked about the stigma. What other factors would you say contribute to this increase of mental health needs in prison?
Well, if you don't have services outside of the prisons, and people have disordered behavior, they tend to get into trouble. And when they get in trouble and they don't have anywhere to put these folks, not to put them in a negative way, but to try and help them, then they'll be repeaters. They'll repeat their difficulties. They'll get up in front of they'll end up in front of a judge again. The police will be fed up with them because they're having a lot of contact with these people. They really do need to change their behavior, and they'll end up in prison. So that's not all of them. That's a part of the problem. We need to invest much more in diversion programs and trying to keep people, providing them the services that they need, so that they don't end up then breaking the law and ending up in prison. That's not going to keep everybody out of prison by any stretch of the imagination. But that is one way to deal with the situation upstream. Another is to try and put more services into kids and adolescents, because what we know from research is that about 50% of adults that have mental disorders, that starts in childhood, and about 75% of it starts before the age of 24. So if we really want to get into the prevention and promotion end of things, trying to keep people from getting as upset and disordered and ill as possible, trying to help us all be more function better, we should be looking at kids and adolescent services.
Well, thank you very much, John. It's very illuminating, and I hope somebody pays some attention to your report.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
John Service is author of Under Warrant. To access the full report, you can Google John Service plus under warrant, and you'll find it under the Office of the Correctional Investigator.